From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, it's the most powerful political office in Texas, but the two major candidates for a lieutenant governor will not be meeting in a debate. So who is Mike Collier, the Democratic challenger?
We have two very different points of view on very important issues that face Texans.
This is Texas Matters. From Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. The lieutenant governor is said to be the most powerful politician in Texas because he has so much control over the state Senate. Republican Dan Patrick has used that office to further his social conservative vision for the state.
I'm a Christian first, a conservative second, and a Republican third. My faith means everything to me. That's why I placed in God We Trust in the Senate and under God in our state pledge. I helped build the first prison seminary in Texas and passed the sonogram bill that could save 15,000 babies' lives this year. I honor God first, not government. That's why I'll fight against Obama's attacks on the Texas conservative values that we share.
Dan Patrick for Lieutenant Governor.
But businessman Mike Collier says he wants to be the next lieutenant governor of Texas, and he's the Democrats' nominee. I spoke to Collier about his vision for Texas and what he's offering voters. We're also reaching out to Patrick and offering him equal time.
Yeah, so my name is Mike Collier, and I'm the Democratic nominee for Texas lieutenant governor. And I don't hold office. I'm an accountant, a certified public accountant, and I have some ideas as to how to solve some of these big problems we face in the state, such as public education funding and property taxes.
So how'd you come to be the candidate for a lieutenant governor?
Well, my story starts for when I ran for comptroller 4 years ago. And so I decided, I've always felt like government would work a lot better if our politicians had a skill in the private sector, mine's finance and accounting. If they offered it up for the public good, did good work, don't stay too long. I've always felt that. And I decided that I would offer my skills and my services as the candidate for comptroller because we have a real problem with public education funding and property taxes in the state. And so I've diagnosed the problem and ran on that basis. And that was 4 years ago. But the party were very supportive of me, and they asked me to stay involved and to run again. And the party asked me to run for lieutenant governor, which brings us to the present.
And you're challenging the incumbent, Dan Patrick, the Republican who holds the seat now. What's wrong with what Dan Patrick's all about?
Well, he and I are two very different points of view in terms of what comes next in the state. I'm very pro-public education and anti-vouchers. And Dan Patrick is pro-vouchers, and so by definition, he's not as pro-public education as I am, and we could talk about that at length. In terms of school funding, we have a real problem with school funding, and the way we handle school funding, it's driving our property taxes through the roof. And so I have a plan to begin to resolve that, and Dan Patrick has failed to resolve the property tax problem. It's gotten much worse in his 12 years in government. Those are the two major issues. Also, I believe we should expand Medicaid. I think that's a very good deal for Texas. Dan Patrick is opposed to expanding Medicaid. And there are other areas, but we are very different people when it comes to what comes next for the state.
Dan Patrick and you, Mike Collier, you're both candidates for the two major parties running for lieutenant governor. Lieutenant governor is probably the most powerful office in Texas. You're not going to meet on a stage and do a debate. Why not?
Well, I'm ready. I'll do it. I think the lieutenant governor candidates owe it to Texans to debate, because particularly when you're so diametrically opposed on the issues, we need to talk about public education and we need to talk about property taxes and the rest. And so I'm willing to debate. I've always said that. Dan Patrick has announced, even before a single invitation came our way, Dan Patrick announced that he would not debate. So he'll have to explain himself. But I think he's mocking Texas voters, frankly.
But Dan Patrick is not opposed to debating per se. He agreed to debate with Geraldo Rivera on Fox
yeah.
News.
Well, Dan Patrick has never, ever, ever shied away from a debate in his entire political and radio career. He has debated every opponent he's ever had. He's debated people that he wasn't running against. He's wanting to debate Geraldo Rivera. I'm the only person that's ever come along that Dan Patrick has backed down from a debate, and it's because I've got the facts on my side and a point of view that I think is compelling. And frankly, property taxes have gone up dramatically since Dan Patrick got into politics. He doesn't know how to solve the problem. And I do, and he knows that if he meets me on the debate stage, I will completely discredit him as it relates to property taxes.
Well, when we talk about property taxes, it's not a uniform sort of issue or formula. There are corporations that own a lot of property, and they seem to really get along well with Dan Patrick's positions on property taxes.
There is a huge loophole in the property tax law that benefits the owners of large commercial and industrial properties. It was law that was introduced in 1997. It's called the Equal and Uniform Law. It was immediately apparent that the law was drafted haphazardly, and it allows the owners of large commercial and industrial properties, such as refineries and petrochemical plants and downtown skyscrapers and so forth, because of that law, they can hire lawyers and they can sue their appraisal district and they can get the value of their property reduced in ways that we cannot as homeowners. And they do it a lot. In 2006, the largest appraisal districts in the state estimated that they were underpaying their taxes to the tune of $4 billion a year. Now, that's one of the reasons why our property taxes as homeowners are so high. It's not the only reason, but it's a big reason. So the one step that I intend to take as Lieutenant Governor is to call for a vote to close that loophole. Legislation to close that loophole has been proposed many times over many years, but the Senate never votes, and so they can't be held accountable. So that's the power of the Lieutenant Governor, is to compel the Senate to vote to close that loophole. And we'll see which senators have the audacity to vote against closing that loophole, because then they'd have to go back to their constituents and explain why it is that they kept that loophole open, which drove homeowner property taxes up and drove school funding down.
So you're saying, your argument is that there's been a shifting of the burden of property taxes, who's going to pay the most property taxes, away from large commercial property owners. If you own a mall, if you own a refinery, you own these other giant pieces of property, you don't have to pay, you get a deal. Whereas, and so when you get a deal in that area, it's the homeowner who's got to pick up the tab.
That's exactly right. There's no question, there's no mistaking that there has been a shift in the tax burden away from the largest corporations and onto the backs of homeowners and small businesses. I mean, small businesses are caught up in this in a big way, too. Their businesses, property taxes have gone up so high. These are small businesses. These are the guys that can't, you know, afford to hire attorneys and do what the big guys do. And so, yes, the burden has been shifted from the large corporations onto our backs. And it's bad for the economy, too, when you think about it, because when you take money away from homeowners and small businesses and starve our schools and then turn that money over to the large corporations, that money leaves the state. Now, the owners of these large corporations, many of them don't live here because they're publicly traded companies. They also have operations in other states and other countries. So when the winners of the tax cut sweepstakes are always the big corporations, they haul that wealth out of the state. And you can see that in our unemployment numbers. Texas is declining in terms of our unemployment. We were in the top third relative to 50 states. When Dan Patrick, for example, was first elected, we're now in the bottom half.
So you're running on the Democratic ticket. The Democrats haven't won a seat in statewide in over 20 years. Why not? What's wrong? I mean, if you've got this message and you think it works and people will resonate with people and you've got all the solutions, why aren't people buying what the Democratic Party is selling?
Well, the party asked me to address that specific question after we lost in 2014. And so they asked me to study our performance in 2014 and come back and make recommendations, which I did. And I made two recommendations, and we're executing on this now, which is why we're much closer in the polls than we have been in many, many years. My recommendation to the party was to do two things. First of all, we must also campaign on economic issues, not just social issues. And so Democrats are fighting for working and middle-class families. And so such things as education and property taxes and health care, we need to have a point of view on that and campaign hard on that, which we hadn't done, and we are now. The other recommendation was we needed more down-ballot candidates. It's such a big state, and we have plenty of Democrats in the state, people that are concerned about public education and health care and so forth, but it takes down-ballot candidates to move voters to the polls, and that was the biggest challenge, I thought, coming into 2018. But because of what's happening in our political environment, you know, in a large sense, lots of really good, ordinary Texans decided to jump in and compete because they're concerned about our country. And so we got a lot of great down-ballot Democratic candidates. Stephen Kling, for example, is running for the Senate here in the San Antonio area.
Against Donna Campbell?
That's right. That's right. And so what that means is that the Democratic Party message is much more local than it's been. It's much more economics-oriented than it's been. It resonates much more with voters, and so it's showing in the polls. I mean, we're in low single digits with several weeks to go, so it looks very different in 2018.
So you're thinking that a blue wave will be hitting Texas and would raise your campaign, maybe be able to beat the 20 years drought that we've had with Democrats?
Well, I personally don't use the term blue wave because it suggests that it's really an anti-Trump movement. I really don't see it that way, frankly. It's true that Trump stimulated a lot of Democrats to run for office. But what's really going to drive the output in a few weeks' time is the fact that the people that came out to run because of Trump and how they felt about democracy are not running against Trump. They're running on local issues, and it's resonating with voters. And so, yes, I do think that we have a very good chance of winning in a few weeks' time.
Well, when an incumbent runs for office, like Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is running for office and you're challenging him, we generally look at it as whether or not voters want to fire the incumbent. And what has Dan Patrick done that he deserves to be fired for?
Well, there are hundreds of thousands of retired teachers that are absolutely as mad as hornets, and they ought to be, because they had their health care benefits cut dramatically. And we've got retired teachers out there who can't afford their medicine. I mean, it's a real crisis. There's hundreds of thousands of them. I meet with them everywhere I go. Teachers are very unhappy at what's happening in public education. Our class sizes are getting larger. We don't have enough special education teachers in the classroom. They've gotten small raises along the way, but the cost of health care burns up those raises, and so they feel very disrespected. They're very dissatisfied with Teach to the Test, and they lay a lot of this blame at Dan Patrick's feet. And, of course, parents are unhappy with their students in public schools. Those that are concerned about school safety are very dissatisfied with Dan Patrick because he blocked the governor's initiatives to increase school safety. So if you add up all the retired teachers and all the teachers and all the parents, and then you've got all the property taxpayers who really aren't being told truthfully what's happening, there's a lot of anti-Dan Patrick sentiment out there, which is one of the reasons why our campaign is doing so well.
One of the issues that Dan Patrick tried to propel his campaign with is the bathroom bill, the so-called bathroom bill, in which he was pushing for in the last legislative session, which would have made it a requirement, would have made it illegal for anyone to go to a public restroom that didn't correlate with their gender birth. That was, you know, a big talked about issue. People said it was bad for business in Texas. People called it anti-transgender. Where are you on that?
I'm against it. I was offended by it. I thought it was one of the most hateful publicity stunts that I've ever seen. It's not a real issue. The only time Texans are concerned about it is when Dan Patrick is flapping his jaws about it. The vast majority of Texans think that that was overreach, that it was hateful, that it was a publicity stunt. Even Joe Strauss, somebody that I really respect and admire, saw through it as just a hateful publicity stunt. And he's doing it again, which is unconscionable. And let me look at it. From a business perspective, I can tell you.
What do you mean he's doing it again?
Well, he's revving up the base, and he's talking about when he campaigns, which is rare, he's talking about the bathroom bill again, and he's going to bring it back. There are certain endorsing organizations that aren't going to endorse him because he refuses to give up on the bathroom bill. And Texans don't want it. And as I say, you know, nobody's talking about it or worried about it because it's not real, except when Dan Patrick flaps his jaws about it and he's trying to do it for political reasons. And let me say this. You know, we have a real school safety issue and gun safety issue. It would not call a special session. Our schools are no less dangerous now than they were when Santa Fe happened. He would not call a special session for that. We had a huge flood.
It's the governor, Greg Abbott, who calls a special session.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that. The governor calls a special session, and the governor actually suggested that we have a special session related to gun safety after they had that roundtable. But he said there will only be a special session if there's a political will to get something done. And Dan Patrick said there is no political will. We will not do it. So there was no point in calling that special session. True, the lieutenant governor does not have the legal authority to call a special session, but the lieutenant governor can demand a special session. And Dan Patrick has done the exact opposite.
So when Dan Patrick is talking about he's going to protect the Second Amendment gun rights, is this what he means? Is this what he's talking about?
Well, let's talk about the Second Amendment. You know, I'm a gun owner, right? So when I was younger, I was a deer hunter. My dad and I used to go deer hunting, and I've got the rifle that I bought using paper route money. I like that rifle. And I'm pro-Second Amendment all the way. And a background check system that works is consistent with the Second Amendment, as is red flag law. And that's what the governor said that we should be considering, and that's what Texans want, including many Republicans, because we've got to do something sensible about gun safety. Dan Patrick blocked that, and that is inconsistent with the will of the state, and it's not a Second Amendment argument. You can have a red flag law, just as we already have other laws related to gun safety that are consistent with the Second Amendment.
Red flag laws, meaning that there are indicators to show that this is a person who would be a danger to himself or others. It's in other states. It seems to be.
That's right.
But Dan Patrick is opposed.
Well, let's think about how a red flag law actually works. I mean, you must protect the Second Amendment rights. That's essential. The red flag laws do that. Let me put it to you this way. We already have laws on the books, for example, that's if somebody's convicted of a violent crime with a handgun, they are not allowed to carry a gun. That law is already in the books. We're all living comfortably with that. No one is claiming that's inconsistent with the Second Amendment. What a red flag law is says that you can accelerate that process. So if you think that somebody is a danger to themselves or others, and you have competent evidence of that, and you take it before an independent judge, the independent judge can issue an order that's temporary until you decide whether or not there should be some sort of permanent injunction. And so really all it is taking the laws that are on the books as we find them and accelerating the process, which I think is perfectly sensible.
This is Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm speaking with Mike Collier, the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. Another Dan Patrick position is securing the border. What does securing the border mean to you, Mike Collier, Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor?
We all agree that we should secure the border. We all agree that we should control the border. We all agree that we must enforce the laws of the United States of America. The difference between me and Dan Patrick is that we should be intelligent about it. So we should do what works, and we should be humane about it. I mean, there's no question about it. This notion that we tore children away from their families was a terrible thing to do.
But that was the federal government. That was not Texas.
Well, but I mean, we're the stewards of our values in Texas. I mean, the lieutenant governor is the steward of our values in Texas, and the federal government comes along and is tearing children away from their families. He should have picked up that phone and called the president and said, look, you got to make this stop. And we got 38 electoral votes in Texas. We're not weak. We're strong. Dan Patrick did absolutely nothing. And I'll say this, too. When President Trump issued an executive order saying we're not going to do this anymore, I mean, he caved to political pressure. The very first person to speak up was Dan Patrick, but he waited after the president did the right thing, not before. And I thought that was just a remarkable lack of leadership and cowardice. Back to securing the border. When I go to the Valley and talk to folks that live, not just the Valley, but in Laredo and El Paso and Eagle Pass and Del Rio and the rest, I spend a lot of time along the border. You know, you ask the folks that live there, what do you think we ought to do to secure the border? I mean, they live it day in and day out. And they'll come back and tell you that the right answer is technology and better coordination of law enforcement, and that we can do a much better job securing the border, doing those two things, and still preserve a terrific relationship with all the good people in Mexico, because it's essential to our economies along the border that we have a good relationship with Mexico. And when you ask them how do they feel about the wall, they tell you it will not work and it'll destroy that relationship. So we must secure the border, but we must do it intelligently. And finally, what you saw Dan Patrick and the others in Texas do is throw $800 million or $900 million at the problem. But they wouldn't tell us how the money was being spent. There was zero accountability around those numbers. And lo and behold, 4 years later, they're all excited that the border's not secure when they've been pumping $800-900 million at it for years. And if you talk to folks along the border, you know, what are they doing with that money? What the folks will tell you is that we've got DPS troopers just driving in circles, trying to meet their arrest quotas. So we should take the politics completely out of it and put competence and intelligence and do it right and do it humanely. That's what we should be doing.
With the $900 million that we're spending, the state of Texas is spending every biennium, every 2 years, that goes to border security, which is a federal job. It's not the state's job to secure the border. That's money that could be spent elsewhere in the budget. Where would you put that money?
Well, I mean, if the federal government did its job and then we didn't have to do their job for them, that would free up money to put into public education and some combination of public education and property tax relief. We do have to secure the border, and if the federal government didn't do its job, that we have to step in. So I'm not criticizing the fact that we jumped in. I'm criticizing how we went about doing it.
And So you have campaigned with My Revolution, which is a Bernie Sanders support group or a kind of work with Bernie Sanders. Are you a Bernie Sanders type of candidate?
No, I'm an accounting type of candidate. I often get asked, where do you fit in the political continuum? And I always come back with a very sincere answer, which is that I'm really very analytical. I'm really very an accountant's mindset. And I really don't view my job in this role as aligning or disaligning with movements within the Democratic Party. I view my job as to bring folks together to try to solve these problems. And really, the whole thrust of my campaign is not partisan. The whole thrust of my campaign is, if we want great public schools, these are the steps we must take to achieve that. If we want property tax reform so that we stop getting hit with property taxes, these are the steps that we take to achieve that. And what I've done since I ran for comptroller in 2014 is stay very, very focused on what problems do we face, what solutions are available to us. The Democrats love the sound of it, and they support me. And so my job is not to participate in partisan politics, if that makes any sense. And it's working quite well for me.
Well, you're running as a Democrat. There's going to be partisan politics. If you win your office, there'll be partisan politics in the Capitol, particularly when it comes to the fact that most likely it'll be a Republican majority of the Texas Senate, and you've got to figure out a way, if you win the office, to create bills that are going to, I guess, compromise?
The number one problem in the legislature is leadership, in my opinion. And you know, Joe Strauss, for example, was the kind of leader. I really like Joe Strauss. Wish he were still there. You found with his leadership, the House was much more sensible. I mean, the House proposed increasing funding for public education. The Republicans in the House proposed increasing funding for public education. Joe was for that. The problem in the Senate is Dan Patrick. So once Dan Patrick's gone, then the more moderate element of the Senate can express their point of view, and I think we can begin to solve these problems, and I'm really quite confident that we'll do well.
You also have come out in favor of campaign finance reform and redistricting. What would that look like?
Well, let's talk about gerrymandering, which is my highest priority because I have a specific plan to deal with it. Other states have done this. Gerrymandering is the root cause, in my opinion, of all of our political difficulties in the country. It prevents our leaders from compromising. It requires our leaders to become hyperpartisan in a way that none of us prefer. So we must kill gerrymandering before gerrymandering kills democracy. Texans are ready for this. We should do what other states have done, perfect the model, and to create an independent redistricting commission. So that'll be a very high priority of mine as lieutenant governor. It's politically doable, so we'll do that first. I also think that we need to reform campaign finance. That will be something I intend to work on in due course. It's not first up on the agenda because gerrymandering is first up on the agenda. And it's a much more complicated issue. And I think before I just race out and share my point of view as to what the right answer is, I'd like to involve other people in the thinking. I can tell you in terms of my campaign, I'm not taking money from PACs. With a couple of exceptions, the Texas Society of Certified Public Accountants, of which I'm a member, has contributed to my campaign, as have some of the labor unions. I'm supported by AFL-CIO proudly. I'm not soliciting PAC money otherwise, and I'm not receiving PAC money otherwise.
So paint me a picture. What would the Texas look like with a Mike Collier lieutenant governor in office?
Well, I think it's really very simple. I think you'll have somebody who's a very vigorous, unyielding champion of public education, because I think we should set the target of having the best public schools in the nation, not amongst the worst. That'd be a very different Texas whenever we have, and the vast majority of Texans want great public schools. Second, we have to restore confidence in our property tax system. Now, we're getting cheated. I mean, those of us that own homes and small businesses, we're getting ripped off. I mean, there's no question about it. So we need to reform property taxes so that they're fair again, so that Texans have confidence that they're not being cheated. Third, we should expand Medicaid. That's a very good deal financially. There'll be more than a million Texans who are working hard. It's not their fault that they can't afford health care. They'll have health care. That's going to be good for employers. It's going to be good for property taxpayers. It's going to be good for everybody because it'll help bring down the cost of health care. I think we should have absolute protection for Texans with pre-existing conditions enshrined in state law so that we're not dependent upon the courts. kill gerrymandering, as discussed. And then finally, I think we need to bring compassion back to public policy. And when we look at such things as mental health, women's health, child protective services, and we evaluate our policy decisions, we also have to ask ourselves, is this compassionate? Because Texans are compassionate people, but we aren't expressing our compassion in public policy, and that has to change.
I can imagine what Dan Patrick would say as a reaction if he heard that. He would say that Mike Collier is trying to turn Texas into California.
Well, that might be the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard, frankly. Mike Collier is trying to fix the problems that we have in Texas. Dan Patrick would be wise to spend a little bit of time talking to voters about just why it is that property taxes in Texas have gone up dramatically. You know, Dan Patrick ran for the Senate in 2006, telling everybody that he'd work on bringing property taxes down. You know what direction they went? They went up. He ran for re-election to the Senate in 2010, telling people that he would reduce property taxes. What happened next? They went up. Ran for lieutenant governor in 2014, insisting that he could solve the property tax problem, and they went up dramatically. The state budget actually reads, property taxes shall be increased by 26.9% in his term as lieutenant governor. He's desperate to conceal that fact. So I think instead of Dan Patrick worrying about California's problems, he really ought to spend some time worrying about Texas's problems.
But you're talking about doing all of these fixes, and each one of those fixes is going to take a lot of money. Where is that going to come from?
The most important thing that we should do, and the only tax move that I intend to make, and that I'm committed to making, as lieutenant governor, is to close that equal and uniform loophole, as we've discussed. Because it's not raising taxes. It's merely a law enforcement matter, if you think about it. The Constitution, the Texas Constitution, says that if you are a property owner subject to tax, your property will be valued at market value. Now, your home is at market value, and you're paying taxes on that. My home is at market value, and I'm paying taxes on that. So Valero's refinery needs to be at market value, and they need to pay taxes on that. It's just a law enforcement matter. So it's not raising taxes. It's enforcing the law. It's very well known and very well documented. The solution has been drafted and proposed many times. It's a large number that it'll make a difference in terms of public education and property taxes. And it'll give Texans a taste of honest financial leadership, which we need.
Do you think Dan Patrick will change his mind and debate you?
Well, he should. He should. I think Texans are clamoring for it. Everywhere I go, look, here's the deal. I mean, the lieutenant governor is the most important political position in the state. And we have two very different points of view on very important issues that face Texans. And I'm out campaigning and talking about public education and property taxes and health care. And Dan Patrick is absolutely silent. Now, he should come out and present his point of view to voters and see if he can defend property taxes, which have gone up dramatically while he was in power. It's even written in black and white in the budget, and he doesn't defend himself. He must come out and debate.
Mike Collier is the Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor. Tuesday, October 9th is the last day to register to vote in Texas. Early voting begins on October 22nd. Election day is November 6th. If the incumbent, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, wants equal time, we'd be happy to set that up. We're reaching out to his campaign. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters.